Hi, everyone. Welcome to Second Wind Women. I'm Karen Spies, and I'm here today with Kaya Garcia. She is the epic love expert, by the way. She's a relationship and dating expert, and she helps women get the relationship of their dreams. So welcome. Nice to see you.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
So what made you decide to become a relationship expert?
Great question. So for the past 20 years, I've studied one thing. I was always obsessed with love, always obsessed with marriage and relationships ever since I could possibly remember. When I kept a journal at 7 years old, my biggest quandary as a seven-year-old was like, I don't know who I want to marry, Isaac or David, the other two like seven-year-olds in my life. So I was always like destined for this work. And then I studied it in college. I got two psychological degrees. And then at 26, I had my master's degree. I was running. I had a fit body. I owned a house. I owned a car. I had a boyfriend and a nice job. And I was the epitome of success, except I was very ill. Not physically. I was sick, but nobody teaches you what love addiction is. Nobody teaches you that if your whole life you were taught to sit down, shut up, go to the academic system and get straight A's, that most of the time your worth is very much associated to what other people think you are instead of who you think you are. So I became an expert, one, because I was always into it. And then at that time, my boyfriend left me. And instead of being like, whoa, he's an asshole, how can he choose drugs over me? I thought, how did I attract this? How am I the so successful 4.0, 2-degree, 26-year-old? But her boyfriend just left her to go snort ketamine. Like, how does that even work? And I studied at length. Like, the same way I was able to dive into getting straight A's for so many years in academia, I did it on my own. And I learned about addiction, narcissism, codependency, porn addiction, immorality, and the invisible attraction that people have. So like, Karen, why would you like Joe, but like Jack is so not your type, even though they look identical for this example? Like, what makes somebody your type? And it was that I became obsessed with and studied to become an expert in.
That's so much richer than a relationship expert, because that's so true. There are all these factors, right? Narcissism, addiction, love bombing, putting your self-worth on someone else's, you know, someone else's opinion of you. I don't know if you heard, what was it? I know this is going to date this, but I really got into that new Taylor Swift album. And one of the things she's in her one of her songs, she's like, fairy tales, kisses and rainbows. I never thought that would happen to me. So I wouldn't even let myself imagine that. So it's so interesting how people, because I think a lot of people hear like, oh, you want to be in love, or you like, you really were into love, and they judge you, not understanding all the complexities of all the things underneath it.
And there's so many, which is why most relationships are not meant to stay together. I mean, it's just the truth. It's like a sad, you know, it's a sad, hard fact, but a lot of times you don't stay together for the kids because you don't want a broken home. You get the broken people out of your home.
Yeah. Yeah.
And women especially need to be honored a lot more. Like, we don't deserve to suffer. If it's preventable, you should prevent it. And loving yourself and living a life of abundance and health and safety and calm is invaluable and of the utmost importance.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's such a sticky, wicket too. And I know that the domestic, what was it? I mean, not to get all whatever here, but like the number one threat to a woman's life is her domestic partner.
100%.
Yeah. Which is,
I'm insane. On calls all day with women, white women, not to bring race into this, but just the people who happen to be on my podcast so far have been white. They've all had, like, the majority of them have had guns put to their head with the man threatening to K them. And I have, and I have my own podcast, white woman after successful white woman after. So it's like, you don't even understand the prevalence until you get an opportunity to let them speak. What's going on now is women do not have high self-worth. and they are allowing people to dominate, control, and that turns into derangement over time. So right. this idea of getting to know yourself and love yourself, as well as see the signs of unhealthy behavior in the beginning, is truly life-saving.
Yeah. Or people get into a relationship and they develop their self-worth and their partner doesn't evolve with them and becomes threatened, right? That's, yeah, it's that's so crazy. Let's
go back. Let's dial it in. And you can find me at Epic Love Expert. Okay.
I'm done. So you had a boyfriend who left you to do drugs. What does that look like?
It looks like me being a liar and an addict, but I just never did drugs, right? So we don't attract what we want. We attract who we are. The most beautiful, successful women have severely domestic, violent, like, relationships. How the fuck does that happen? Like, she's making $1 million. She comes home and she gets hit. How does that happen? Because I was a liar and an addict. I never lied to other people. I only lied to myself. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do drugs, but I was very much addicted to the approval of other people and a love of a man. And so we matched. We were just the perfect match.
Right.
So, you know, he was, like I said, not what do you want, what I was. And I wasn't a very abusive, like, mean person. So he was not very abusive and mean, but did he neglect me? Yes. Did he lie to me? Yes. Did he not prioritize mm-hmm. me? Yes. Did he cheat on me with drugs? So, you know, after doing the game of choose me or drugs, you know, like, I'll leave you if you don't stop. Of course, a grown man's behavior doesn't change just because he has someone telling him to.
Right.
He eventually said, you know what? You always said choose me or drugs. And I want to go to this festival upstate New York and do a bunch of drugs. So I'm breaking up with you. And I was like numb and in fetal position and crying and be like, what just happened? Like, I'm like making him breakfast that morning. I spent all morning making him breakfast, making him coffee, setting the table, getting dressed for him. And he like slumps in and being like, we're breaking up because I want to do drugs. And I'm like, what? How does that happen? And so thank God, you know, you always have to thank God and grace in these moments. I had a friend who said, you know, who was in CODA, which is for Codependence Anonymous. And she's like, why don't you go to Naranon for friends and family members of people who use narcotics, who use drugs? And so thankfully, you know, I eventually went to the 12-step program and I learned, oh shit, I am not the healthy one here. I'm just as sick as him. I just look better on paper.
That was going to be my next question, how you dealt with that. And so it was joining the 12-step group. Yeah.
I have to say that was a big part of it. There was a simultaneous me becoming obsessed and using my intelligence and academic expertise to become an expert in my own right, right? So when you go to school, you just get education in a classroom, but education is anywhere. Education's everywhere. And it's honestly much better out of the classroom. So I read and I read and I read and I bought every book that you can find on codependency and addiction. And I wanted to know, I needed to know this invisible cause of attraction. So I never repeated it because it's so crazy. And I went to the 12-step program and first I went and I was like, whoa, this is way too much. And I left. And then 6 weeks later, I came back and then I stayed and I went every week and I eventually got a mentor. And you find a safe space where your parents tell you you're weird and crazy. Your friends tell you you're weird and crazy. Everyone says, give him another chance, right? Like, I'm a relationship expert and most other dating coaches are like idiots. And they always go, give him another chance. Try harder. You know, he'll heal. Focus on the positive. I'm like, fuck that. Like, they're just ignorant. They're just straight up ignorant. No hard feelings. They have good hearts, but not a lot of skill. And I sat in the rooms and I realized, you know what? Illness is illness and you're actually not supposed to stay in it. And you're actually not supposed to engage with even family members if they're toxic and abusive.
Yeah.
And it was the only space till this day. And I'm getting myself the chills, which I don't usually get because I'm often a speaker. It's one of the only spaces that I hear people say, even if they're blood, if they're abusive and toxic, you need to stop. You need to separate. Most other people will say, but it's your mom, your dad, suck it up, try harder, instead of being like, how do you protect yourself through this process?
Right. Yeah, because if you're healing, it's different, right? And I think a lot of people, even when you're talking about your friends who are like, stay with him, that's some kind of projection. That's not that's not, doesn't have anything to do with you and your situation and them understanding where you're coming from. It has to do with a projection of what they have heard is right or what they think would be right theoretically, you know?
And it's a projection that they're more afraid of being alone than being with the wrong partner, and that they have their own perception that somehow you're better off if you're married versus single or with someone versus alone, which is just not true.
Okay. So what kinds of psychology did you study when you were in school?
I studied all the different psychologies. I mean, there's different theories, there's different people, there's different modalities. Then I studied sociology. I did also pre-PhD. So after I finished my 4 years, I did just studying relationships with different research and sleep tests. And then in my master's program, there's so many things you study, like biopsychosocial, how do you see things? But at the end of the day, through literally 8 years of straight academia, I realized that school doesn't teach you very much. And I'll never send my kids to school ever.
Really?
I mean, My goal is to have them have high education, but not through an academic system that was created by Rockefeller to keep you poor, which I only learned the past 2 years who even created it and what was the intention behind it. And I was like, oh, that's scary.
But I know what you're talking about, but I have a theory.
Google it.
I will. But I've always said that, like, you know, going to school teaches you to be a good worker. You show up on time, you do what you're told.
Yeah. That was the intention. It was the intention to create sheep to work for the rich, to keep you poor. If you think about it, entrepreneurs, if you're successful, right, or business owners, you know, or millionaires, billionaires, multimillionaires, people who make six figures regularly, they own their own businesses. They do not work for people. They own their own properties.
Of course.
And everyone else who works and got a good job after billions of, you know, well, hundreds of thousands of dollars of graduate, what are they making a year? $100,000 on average.
Right.
Which gets you nothing in 2026, like nothing. You can't buy a house, lunch, okay. Even if they make $200,000, still not very much money today. So it was literally designed to keep you poor. And so what I learned from all of my academia was when I got out of it and I went to the rooms, how much people don't know and how much people don't realize that they don't know because they have not been studying in the right areas with the truth. It's like wisdom versus education. Education hears a lot of information, and wisdom is how do you stay happy, healthy, and sane with true epic love in your life.
Right. Right. So I love that you brought up economics, because let's go there.
Let's talk about it.
That's like one of the biggest challenges, I think, to long-term relationships is economic inequality in the relationship, or one person being the breadwinner and the other person not being the breadwinner. How do you work with people who have that struggle? Because I know that that's huge.
The majority of the women that I work with are single, first of all. Okay. So they're not in a relationship where they're battling their money. But a lot of the times, if women are in a relationship where they're dealing with financial issues, it's always the same in the sense that the lies you tell yourself of why you should stay are never true. And it's more important to leave than to stay. Meaning, I've spoken to a lot of women who are in a horrible abusive relationships, and they would say, well, I wouldn't make it without him. Like, if I work and I have to do this, who's going to pick up the kid? And like, I wouldn't make it without them. But then the shit hits the fan. You know, the gun goes to the head. He fucking beats her again. Right. He cheats on her again. She finds the porn addiction or the girlfriend or the millions of things that are currently going on rampant in American society, not uncommon by any means. And then she says, I'm done. This was the last time. I actually think he's going to do it.
Yeah.
And she picks up her shit and she leaves in the middle of the night scared. And I'm telling you, I've literally heard this, like, in the past 3 weeks, I've heard this story like six times. Like, it sounds like a crazy story, but it's crazy common. Anyway, so she finally leaves, right? Because the shit hits the fan. And then she figures it out. And she figures it out. And sometimes it's a friend, and sometimes it's a shelter, and sometimes it's a family member. But she figures it out. And not one time in the history of a woman who was with the wrong man ever said, I shouldn't have done it sooner.
Right. Right. Yeah. Of course. So how do you work with these people who've been in these really rough situations? I know it's super common. It's just like sexual assault is super, super common. How do you work with these people to get them to a place where, first of all, they're not susceptible to love bombing, and second of all, they are open to the idea or wanting another relationship and can have in their minds the thought that it's not going to be like that?
So women only attract men who will abuse them if they have low self-esteem and low self-worth. Mm-hmm. They don't have a strong sense of identity, and they don't know that they're good, and they don't know that they're lovable. So after doing so many speaking engagements and other podcasts, I created my own podcast, the 100% podcast, where it's literally just stories of women, their abuse, the signs, how it got bad, how they left, and that's it. So it's like women's stories of abuse and getting out of it. And so it's called the 100% podcast because you're 100% fucked up and still simultaneously 100% lovable. And a lot of us forget that second part. We like know the crazy stuff we've gone through. We know the crazy thoughts we've had. And we somehow feel that we're not 100% lovable if people knew like how dark we got or what happened to us or what we've done.
Right.
And that lack of believing that you're lovable is what attracts a man to say, I will love you. I will see you and make you feel special. But only a fucking sick man will want that power because then he's in control.
Yeah.
And he's then needed. So the way you counteract all of that toxicity is by that message of the podcast that I created. You're fucked up. I'm not trying to make you feel like but you're still lovable, not 80% because you had that happen to you. Right now, as is, without changing, without another year of therapy, without losing the weight, without the more money, right now, you're 100% lovable. You deserve only good. Not a little bit of good and then some punishment. No, only good.
Right.
And right. When you truly believe that and you start implementing that into practice, you don't attract nor allow nor find that type of abusive behavior familiar or acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how do you, I mean, obviously that's something that people have to work on within themselves, but how do people judge if they're actually in that spot? And then once they're in that spot, how do you have them reach out, or do they just like, you know, go to the library and look sexy? I mean, what do you, you know, how do you work with people to get them out of, you know, because it's quite a transformation to come from, you know, this is all I deserve, or I can't make it without this guy, to be like, I'm my own person and maybe I'll reject you, maybe not.
So one is you give them an identity. So the movement I created is the love lighter identity. So you're a love lighter now. You light up your own love. You don't allow people to dim your light. When you carry a candle that you know is going to light your fire and keep you warm and cook your food that night, you don't just walk around like this. You walk around like this. You protect it. You walk slowly and carefully. You protect your flame. That's your inner spark. That's your worth. That's your energy. So I give them a new identity. You're a love lighter. You protect yourself. You light up your own love. You don't need other people. You don't allow people to blow you out with negativity or doubt. So one is you genuinely shift your identity, who you believe you are. The other is, how do you love yourself? So there's basically three components of love that I've broken down and teach in my courses and with my clients. One is protection. The second is acceptance. And the third is forgiveness. How do you love yourself? You forgive yourself frequently. You make a mistake, fucked up, still lovable. Definitely made that mistake, still lovable. Okay, so you forgive yourself and others. That person who hurt you and abused you, they were suffering out of their brains. They didn't know what they were doing. And you let it go. And you develop compassion and you release the toxicity inside of you. So forgiveness of self and others. And releasing the past. And then acceptance. I accept myself as is. I don't think that when I lose my weight or when I get another, you know, when I figure this last thing out, then I'll start dating. Then I'll be lovable.
you're lovable right now as is. Like if you truly accept all that you are and all that you're not, that acceptance is a very powerful calm. And you show up in life and in the world in a very different way. And the last thing is protection. I have healthy boundaries. If you stand too close to me, I'm not going to think about that if I move away, you're going to feel uncomfortable. I'm right. going to think about if I feel uncomfortable. If you start right. yelling at me on the phone, I don't care if you're my boss or my mom, I'm going to be like, gotta go and hang up. If you leave me a nasty ass voice note on WhatsApp, I'm not going to listen to it after 1 second when I realize this is not going to be healthy for me to listen to. Right. I protect myself. I genuinely leave relationships, conversations, and places that I feel are doing a disservice to my energy, my mental health, and my goals in life. And those are practical, tactical skills.
Right.
And then the simultaneous thing is you learn, there's like an education, like there's a book I'm finishing, there's courses, just how do you see narcissism on date number one? How do you see addiction on date number one? What does the behaviors look like? Because they show up the exact same way through all of them. So it's that formula that transforms.
Maybe it's my background because, you know, I have a master's degree in Buddhist studies. But to me, that sounds very much like a spiritual path.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah, where you're valuing yourself, you're protecting yourself, you're having compassion, you're, you know, relating to others. Yeah, it's very interesting because we think of love as such an outward thing when really it starts from inside. I love that image of the candle. That's really beautiful.
It's very spiritual because we can only feel safe when we relinquish control on every other thing outside of us. And we replace that need for control by controlling ourselves. I control my thoughts. I control my speech. I don't watch the news. I don't bitch about people. I speak about things that make me happy. I take good action. I don't hurt people with my mouth or my hands. I hug people. I give charity. And so when you are in control of your thoughts, your speech, and your action, you got a lot to control every single day. But then you release control on your boss, your mom, your dad, your boyfriend, your husband, the people, the world, the president. You're like, you know, Mel Robbins, they let them. Like, you don't have that control. I mean, she didn't create that. That's a very spiritual old concept.
Right.
The only thing you can control is yourself. And then when you have that spiritual shift of I'm a love letter, I protect me, and therefore I attract goodness in my life, you relinquish control and you put it in a higher power because you're not that powerful to make somebody else change.
This is really like poignant since it's just the new year just turned. And I see all these people talking about manifesting and vision boards and all that stuff. And they're all always trying to control the outside, the outer world. And yeah, no, I think that's really profound.
You can impact what happens in your world through your mind. There's a true form of manifestation, but you're using your mind and your thoughts and your beliefs to impact what you want to come into your life. So you can manifest, but it's in God's timing and in His details, but it's through using your vision of what you want to create, not trying to make other people become that.
Did you ever see the movie, I think it was called The Bicycle Thief?
No, but it sounds cool. I'm going to write it down now.
It was this very funny Italian actor. I don't know if you can, it's a very intense movie, but the whole premise is that these people are in Poland and they're rounded up by the Nazis. And this guy doesn't want this little boy to know what's happening is like awful. And he's like, look, they're taking us to a party. And so everything that they did, he talked to this boy and reframed it as if it was something like amazing and positive. And it just really, you know, I mean, kind of a horrible, like really intense example, but just like understanding you can control your attitude. You're in a Salvadorian prison. They can control your body, right? You can always reframe things in your mind to experience the outside world in a way that's more nurturing to you, even if it's not being nurturing.
And, you know, talking about the Holocaust, Viktor Frankl, I think, has one of the most famous books of all time, A Man's Search for Meaning. And he came out of the Holocaust and he was like, no matter what happens between this stimulus, like the actual event that happened, and how you respond is a space. And that space is your power. That space is God. That space is your choice. And something, you know, someone can step on your toe and then you can freak out and scream and hit someone, or you can take a deep breath and being like, are you okay? Or you can just move your foot, or you can, I don't know, there's a million things you could do. But we always have choice of response. And that either makes us feel dignified and in control, or self-loathing and out of control, which then facilitates more of that behavior.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. One more example. There's this great example. I loved, maybe you'll get it, but there's this great example of this Tibetan teacher who had a student who basically like couldn't learn anything. He was like, I tried to teach this guy. He can't figure out anything. So basically he made the guy super, super mad, to where the guy was like, he was going to beat the teacher. He was chasing him down. And the teacher's behind a door. The guy's beating on the door. And the teacher goes, stop and look at your mind right now. Like, think about it. What's happening right now? Why are you going after me? Because you're upset. Right? I think that story is so cool because it's such a unusual technique.
Yeah, because so many of us like to blame instead of take accountability. Like with the guy who left me, I was the one with straight A's and a master's degree and a fit body, and who, right? I was the good, successful, smart, and he left me to go do drug. What a loser. What an asshole. What an addict. But no, like I had to say, how did I create this? Right. How am I a part of this scene? How did I attract this type of relationship? And only through taking radical responsibility for my life and the breakup, even though the obvious easy thing is to blame, then that is how I healed and transformed my life. And now have a company where I help many women heal. And I'm in an amazing marriage. Like my marriage is extraordinary. I could have never gotten to my extraordinary marriage and my cute little kids if I blamed him, because then he needed to change, not me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So in your time frame, like you're 25, right? And you're going through this transformation, right? This really tough time that ends up in you becoming, you know, really, really focusing on relationships. How did that affect your relationships with like other people that you knew who were, you know, like either in your family or in your friend group? And where you could see things that you couldn't really see before.
It's really hard because when you first start healing, you realize that you need to take a lot of distance. And so it becomes both invigorating and isolating at the same time. Invigorating because you're finding yourself in truth and God, and isolating because you realize so much of the people around you were toxic and facilitating more toxicity and unhealthy behaviors that you were modeling by default of just being around them. So I literally moved countries. I started a moving program and I said, you know what? If I'm ever going to really heal, I can't do it in this environment. So I packed one bag, one suitcase and my guitar, and I flew to a totally different country, and I got a job, and I started and I continued my healing there, and I found a 12-step program there, and I eventually started my first company there and met my husband there and had my kids there and got married there. Now we moved back to America. But I think that it's not that I think, I know your environment is a massive either catalyst for continued growth, or like you can't grow. It's like when people get out of jail and if they don't have new friends, like no matter how much they want to never do that again, even if they genuinely don't ever want it, like nothing in their body says, I want to go back. If they're in an environment, they will by default of what is set up for them. And so I knew how impactful your environment is, especially because I had the psychological background. One of the big things is called some illness by proxy. And I remember reading this and it's like, you can get
Munchausen's. Is it Munchausen's? Yeah,
like, I don't remember the exact one, but it was, they used the word in the DSM-4 at that time was by proxy, which literally means by default of being in proximation to someone, you get their mental illness. I was like, holy shit, because there's a lot of fucking crazy shit in my house, you know, like I don't want that seeping into me. And actually now as an entrepreneur, I've spent thousands and thousands of dollars putting myself in rooms with people who make more money than me, with people who understand money better than me. Not because I've like become best friends with anyone. I was just like, I want the osmosis. I want the environment. I want that energy. So I actually had to move completely and slowly rebuild my relationships back up with my family, but after some time with healthy distance.
Yeah. You know, they say something like they can tell how much somebody makes by their five closest friends or the five people they spend the most time with. Yeah. And again, with your, if you're talking about self-love, if you're talking about boundaries, if you're talking about valuing yourself, right, then making a change like that, making a drastic change like that has a point, because you can't, you know, if you're hungry, you're not going to learn how to make beautiful cakes. You're going to eat the ingredients before the cake gets made.
Yeah. And, you know, if people call you names or tell you you're crazy or stupid or push back on your boundaries, people who are unhealthy have very weak boundaries. So if you put up a boundary, they fight back. And, you know, most people have not been raised with healthy boundaries. So if they're on a healing journey and then they're like, no, actually, I'm not going to do that for you, that person's like, what the heck are you talking about? And they lash out, and then you have to deal with like abuse and second guessing yourself. And is this really worth it? And maybe I'm wrong for creating all this, you know, discord. But if you just remove yourself from those same dynamics, you don't have to go through that cycle of self-doubt where sometimes you just revert back to old environments and old relationships. Right. So it's so important just to give yourself space, not because you don't like or love the people from whom you need to distance yourself for, but because you need to like and love yourself more and your future more.
I mean, that's basic psychology. You have to be like, if you're part of a community, that community forms your worldview, right? And in a relationship is a kind of a very small community.
And a family. Yeah. Family relationships are like microcosms. Yeah.
Yeah. What about like so for me, I've always thought about like the idea of a long-term relationship is, I've been married a couple of times. It was a long thing, but,
you could be my client. I love you. I was like, you could be my client. I love you.
It's like when you're together with somebody, you have this idea that they're a distinct person, right? And that's their identity, and that's who they're going to be 30, 40, 50 years from now. But really, people are continuities. People are not, especially as we're talking about, when their personality is so formed and supported by the world that they've created around them or the world that they're part of. So how do you, but you're only working with people who are just basically getting into, you're not working with people who are actually in long-term relationships, right?
No, because then you're talking to an addiction, not a person.
Say more.
Most relationships, first of all, they're coming for help. It usually means there's been a lot of bad shit for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
That's what the truth is. Nobody's like, we had a little quarrel and now I'm spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on therapy. Like that's not what happens. Right. It means the shit has hit the fan, right? Like I have had so much abuse and or discomfort or crying or the cheating or the addictions for so long. I am either going to leave or I'm going to get therapy. But like, honey,
yeah, it's an ultimatum. Right?
Yeah, you should fucking leave. Like it's too late. You know, that's the reality. That's not me being a Debbie Downer. That's the reality of what happens the majority of the time. So what was your question? What was your question? Had like, the women who are in it?
I don't know if my question is relevant if you're not working. I mean, the idea of a relationship is being like a dance between two people, right?
So it shows up in the beginning.
Pardon? It shows up in the beginning?
So the book that I'm finishing up now, it's basically like you have an exchange. So basically all relationships have essentially two patterns, right? It's not, you don't have to spend 20 years like me to become an expert. Two patterns, guys, ready? Go. One is called love and it is it's noted by prioritization, meaning you are the priority in that person's life. And mm-hmm. The words that you would use to define it is called consistent and calm. So if you were going to be like, how's your relationship? It's consistent, it's calm. And I'm definitely his priority. That's love. And then the opposite of love is called exchange. It's when you're being used. And then there's just versions of being used. So abuse is on a spectrum. If you look at one side of the spectrum, there's neglect. He's just not there for you. He just goes out. He just jerks off. He just smokes pot for an hour and you don't fucking know where he is. He just works till midnight and he's not home for dinner again. So there's neglect, right? He's not beating you or anything like that. It's just inconsistent, not calm, right, not predictable. And then in the middle is like emotional abuse, mental abuse, verbal abuse. And then at the other end of the spectrum is physical and sexual abuse, right? He hits you, he threatens you, and with extremism. They're the same, they're on the same spectrum. They're just different sides. They show up in different ways. So if you're not in love, which is consistency, calm, and prioritization with sobriety and spirituality and safety, then you're in a form of an exchange. You are both using each other to distract or numb parts of your pain that you have not dealt with. And that dance can go on for decades. And a lot of the clients I work with been out of marriages for 30 years, 20 years, 8 years, 10 years. I mean, you can dance for a long time until you get out, if you ever get out. But exchange is, and it shows up right away. I am using you not for who you are, but what I can get from you.
Right. Right.
And it doesn't mean that there's not affection or great times. There's affection, good sex, and great times. There's also unpredictability and inconsistency and fear.
I like how you take that down to just inconsistency, because I think a lot of people excuse behavior like that, or, you know, they diminish, right? When things aren't consistent or great, because it's not abusive, right? So that the most people have a dichotomy, which is I'm loved, he values me, she values me, whatever, or there's a horrible abuse and you're somewhere in between. But I love the idea of exchange, because it's so prevalent, you know?
It's prevalent, and it's why women are able to lie to themselves. Well, he doesn't hit me, or, you know, the last boyfriend hit me, but this one just puts me down, so it's not really that bad. Or this one puts me down, but he's not like my other ex who, you know, was cheating on me all the time. Or this one cheats on me, but at least he shows up every night and pays all the bills. And everyone lies to themselves, and they lie about why the exchange is acceptable. And we have great times. We have good sex. We went on a family trip, and he takes care of the kid. And they always punctuate their abuse, their sadness, their pain, and their discord with a fond memory. As if a fond memory removes the suffering that they've experienced for years, and it doesn't.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I saw a crazy thing on Reddit this week. Actually, it's right in line with this, because a lot of people, if you want to see crazy relationship stories, go on to Reddit, because people, there's a group on there called like, Am I the Asshole? And people tell all these stories and they're like, Am I the asshole here? And then, you know, people comment on it. But there was this one that I saw this past week where this woman was like, oh, I got married. And then, you know, on our honeymoon, I put my dress aside and my husband peed on my dress. And I said, why are you doing that? And he said, I'm just marking my territory or something like that. And everybody on Reddit was like, get the fuck out.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
That's crazy.
And but, she said, after putting that, several people told her that that had happened to them.
Right? That's what I'm trying to tell you, Karen. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Everyone thinks their stuff is so crazy until you have like a podcast like mine, where woman after woman after woman, he put a gun in my head and threatened to kill me. Wasn't the first time. It was like the bajillionth time. Every woman, these are white women that happen to be on my podcast, not even like culturally different, more, you know, violence. It's insane. And every time I hear it, I'm always shocked and like, and I've heard it dozens and dozens. I'm like shocked. And at the same time, I'm like, this is insanely prevalent, which is why I started my podcast to break the shame about it. But what you're saying is like just so powerful, because the insanity, I promise you, it doesn't have so many patterns of behavior. People just suffocate the thought. How are you doing? I'm great. How's our relationship? Great. How's he treating you? Great. We had a great vacation the other day. He didn't. They didn't tell them that he hit her on one night, or she found him, you know, whatever, on porn one night. Oh, the vacation was great. The kids had a great time. Everyone's so full of shit. And people need to be like, no, he fucking pissed on my dress. And everyone should be like, oh, you need to get out. And then she'd be like, really? People need to be a lot more honest with the brutality of the truth instead of pretending they're okay in falsity.
I think they're ashamed. I think they're 100%. Ashamed, so they keep it a secret.
100%. You know?
Yeah. That's really sad. So tell me about your book. Do you have a new book coming out, or you have a current book?
Pre-order my book. I have a lot of books, but this is the one that I'm in middle of like finally pushing to publication. You guys can pre-order my book. It's called The Little Pink Book, and it is literally the book on dating. So it's, how do you see signs of narcissism on date number one? How do you see addiction on date number one? How do you see control on date number one? It is not a passion project. It's based on 20 years of psychological evidence and scientific proof. It is not me giving you advice. It is the truth of how perseveration, which comes from the word to persevere, which is a type of speech pattern that narcissists have, where they go on and on and on, and you're kind of just a part of the conversation, but like a side note to the conversation. All the things that they say, and all the ways that you know how to love yourself. So it's like a very practical application of dating. So what are the questions you ask yourself before the date? What are the actual questions you ask him during the date? What do you need to observe and take mental notes on that he says and does during the date? What are the biggest red flags scientifically proven that's going to destroy your relationship if you go out on date number two? One of them is he talks about his ex. Another one is he talks about sex. Another one is he orders for you. Yep.
Wow.
If a man goes on date number one and starts talking to his ex about you, you have no prioritization in his life. You are simply there as an exchange to help him heal what he hasn't done himself. And you are going to be dragged along for a nice, crazy ride.
Wow. Wow. It's called The Little Pink Book or The Pink Book?
I'm actually deciding between the mini pink book or the little pink book, but it's right now The Little Pink Book.
Okay.
Book on dating.
This sounds life-changing.
It is.
For so many people.
I shared it with my clients, my private clients, and like we were all crying together. One of my clients was like, this is life-saving. And she cried and I cried and I was like, it really is. Because like if women had this, they don't need to go through the abuse to finally figure this shit out 30 years later. They can just read a book, learn the information, simultaneously learn how to love themselves and save themselves years and children of agony.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause once you accept a relationship or once you get into it, that's when you start having the secrets, glossing over and going, oh yeah, it's great. Because you feel trapped, even if, you know, economically or just psychologically, right? I mean, that's kind of what we've been talking about.
The fear of abandonment and the fear of failure is why women stay. And so like, that's one of the beginning parts of the book is like, know the two fears that keep you in unhealthy relationships. Fear of failure. Like you won't be able to do it on your own without him. You're going to fail in life. And fear of abandonment. Like you won't make it if you're alone. And I was like, that's just not true. You're strong. Like you can make it on your own and you definitely don't need him. But if you can see it, then it doesn't stay. Shame only exists in darkness. It's only existing in what you don't know in awareness or speak about. So when you have a book that just pulls out the deepest roots as well as with the education, you can't go into dating ever again the same. You can't unsee what you now have seen and know.
I mean, that sounds like everybody who's dating, and maybe even people who aren't, probably need that information. I need that information. I'm going to sign up for that. Because, yeah. You know, I came from I remember sitting with a friend and we were at a bar, we were drinking, and she was like, I always thought it was like, I mean, she was being a little facetious because we were drinking, but she was like, I always thought it was like you got together with somebody and then once you had like a sexual relationship with them, that like cemented the thing and then you were together and that was like, again, exchange, just like you're talking about. But, you know, as a Gen X person, that's how we grew up. That's how we just thought it worked. That's how the boomers taught us it worked, you know, because that was the prevalent story. I don't think it was true by far.
It's not. And if you don't let a man pursue you and just show you who he is without even the exchange of sex, you won't have the information you need to know if he's healthy or unhealthy. Because a man is driven by sex. I mean, it's a pretty big incentive. I mean, women too. It's a very big, women want the affection, the attention, the intimacy, the undivided connection. Men want this, you know, when men actually want a lot of the similar things.
Mm-hmm.
They're very misunderstood. They're very emotional. Men are actually more emotional than women. It's very, very misunderstood. Men are just taught to suppress it. And men have hormonal patterns every 24 hours, and we have it every 28 days, whatever it is. And so we go through it per month, they go through it per day. But men have a lot of emotions and a lot of needs and a lot of desire to be understood and to be comforted and to be loved, but they also don't know how to get it. They also were mistaught in a society on how to achieve it, which is why porn addiction is like really rampant now. They're getting these like highs of false intimacy. And then it's destructive, and then it fucks your brain up, and then you're actually an addict, and you don't know left from right or up from down, and you don't know when you're drunk and hitting your wife or sending her flowers. Like, you actually lose sense of reality. But the truth is, men need love too. And what I was just saying to you, like, no, you don't just have sex with them, because the sex is a byproduct of safety that you give to a relationship once the safety has been proven, not to create the safety.
Right. Yeah, I love what you're saying about false intimacy. And that's what I told my daughter when she was like a teenager. I was like, if you rush into and start sleeping with somebody right away, you feel like you just pretend that you trust them, and then you develop this trust and this intimacy, but it's not based on anything. Right? You don't know if that person deserves it. You don't know if something goes wrong, boom, you can break up. Anyway. But one thing I also wanted to mention is, you know, I've heard a lot in my years of trying to understand men. I heard one person who was a woman that had transitioned into being a man, and they had started getting testosterone shots. And this person did, it was like on social media, they were like, I never understood my whole life what people talked about when they talked about how men were driven by sex, until I started getting testosterone shots, and I felt rabid. I would see any woman and be completely, you know, almost out of control just with lust. And I was like, oh my God, is that what they're dealing with? That's so intense. Maybe it was just this person's individual experience, but yeah, no, you're right. Men are very misunderstood. And because of the fact that, you know, I don't want to turn this into like we dislike men, because men are great.
Men are wonderful.
Yeah, men are amazing, but it's just such a fraught dance.
Yeah, and it's not about men versus women. I happen to focus on women, but you know, women are unhealthy too, and an unhealthy woman is just as crazy as an unhealthy
what
man.
What are we? Yeah.
It just shows up differently. Women can be manipulative, and they can spend all the men's money, and they can also cheat. And women have their own shit too. It's just a different expression.
Right.
But I think at the end of the day, like, everyone just needs to believe that they're lovable, because they won't seek out that false high from their partner, which means you have to do a lot of work on yourself before you decide to put all of you into a dynamic with another.
Right. So do you do like workshops or classes or anything? How can people connect with you? Or you just do private work with clients?
I do workshops. I do speaking events. I have a mastermind, which is a group coaching weekly call. I have privates. So I do it all. I mean, primarily I work with clients one-on-one or in masterminds. So that's, like I said, a group, a community. It's powerful support, powerful transformation. I personally love that in combination with one-on-ones. I think one-on-ones without a community just takes longer for your transformation. I think the vulnerability that you hear other women share, as well as you get to feel comfortable sharing, breaks the shame. And if you can break shame, you can transform much more rapidly. So people can find me. I need to update this domain name, which I'm telling my husband. But the best way right now is to go to marriedin2025.com. And
How do you spell that? What's that?
Married, like 2025.
Okay.
And it's my lead magnet, like a free gift to you.
Right.
Where you put in your name and email and you get 7 videos. It's actually 9 videos. 7 of the most common dating mistakes, as well as 2 bonus videos. So you get 9 full videos immediately for free on the most common dating mistakes that women don't see, or they think they know and can trust their gut intuition, but they don't have the education. So it's all fuzzy wuzzy. And that's how you can really contact me. So you'll get into my system. It's totally free. You get educated immediately. You get value immediately. And that's like one really great step. And then if you want to contact me directly to start working with me or join my mastermind, which I highly recommend, the transformation of these women. Sometimes they've been with therapists for 6 years and they accomplish what they've been dreaming of with their therapist for 6 years in 2 sessions with me and my mastermind. So it's like, it is powerful. It is totally there for you and cultivated for your transformation. And if you want to just, you're ready to invest in yourself and put in your energy, you can go to connectwithchaya.com. Chaya is my name. So you connect, C-O-N-N-E-C-T, with W-I-T-H, and my name, C-H-A-Y-A, connectwithchaya.com. And that is my calendar link. And you book a call and you just hop on a call with me. First call is totally free. It's a discovery call. See if you're the right fit and we get you started.
That's amazing. I'm so glad that we connected, because it sounds like what you're doing, like I said, sounds like a spiritual path. It sounds life-changing. It sounds really transformative.
It is. And it is the work that impacts every other relationship, your love relationships, your money relationships, and your health. And so if you want to grow with spirituality, with making more money, with finding your partner, or having better relationships, even with your family that you currently have, learning how to love yourself is truly the linchpin. So I highly recommend any woman to join my coaching program. It changes your life and you get such great friends and support that's truly transformational.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. My pleasure. And just to say more things, you can follow me at Epic Love Expert. That's my socials, because so many relationships are, and I help you get the epic.
Yeah, we like epic. Awesome. Yeah. Thanks so much, Chaya.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.